Computer. Okay, recording is starting, so that's very good. So we get an overview of your applications.
Phew, off to a slow start. Okay. So this is my home page, and the projects, I suspect that the different users go to the different counties via different routes, but it'd probably be okay if you guys, I mean, more than okay, it would probably be wise for you guys to set something up somewhat similar to this under your Terra GIS domain. So the county that's probably the most complex is Sublette. And they all follow, let me just back up real quick. They all have this index.html with the disclaimer and sometimes the ability to download. And so then they are all they're all going to look like this. So really
One
quick.
question. A question would be, is usually the cartography the same for each of them or different?
Very different.
Okay.
I mean, you can surf through them, but there's a lot of differences between these counties for various reasons. One reason that some of them just have a whole lot more stuff. Another reason is that it, these have evolved over 20 years. And so, there's a lot of variation. So like these four, first four buttons are legacy. In other words, zooming in and stuff like that. I try to discourage users from using it. I use the wheel. I'm dragging the map. You can see that the little cursor, when I drag, it changes to a hand. You can see that this is with none of the buttons active up here, okay? So I can do the old legacy style, panning. Same thing with these buttons. But the more modern thing, of course, is the pan and zoom. And the default click action, the reason you had a question mark there, is the get info stuff. So again, for legacy users, there's the info tool, identify tool, and Esri speak. If you drag it, you get multiple. They all have a jump to menu. I'm going to go to a more urban area. Whoops. sorry, I don't even know how to use this with the. So, again, the default action is get info. I can hold the control key and drag and get info on multiple ones. And then the info tool allows you to build a selection set. So I can add to the selection set by clicking additional parcels. And similarly, I can remove from the selection set, clicking on one that's already selected.
I have
It's
one
got
question. So if you do the identify, you get this. I guess is that the vector layer that you have on top where it shows the selected items?
Yeah.
And do you get that by, we do that same thing. The way we have it is we have a hidden geometry field which isn't just shown as WKT, how are you doing this?
Yeah, I'm sure it's the same thing. One of the cool things here, I'll just do two. You can see as I move the mouse over the info
Okay.
on the right side, we get that. Let's not get into the mechanics quite yet.
Okay.
It'll be just a little bit quicker if we if I'm
Yeah.
going to try to go through this as quick as I can. I know I'm doing some really, really basic stuff, but I think it'll just help us I mean, I can hit F12, you can hit F12, and whoops. So if I go like that, here's the request, here's the response, and you can see the geometry. I return two geometry objects. One's a polygon, one's a point. The point is used for the labeling, and the polygon is for the exterior highlighting. And so, yeah, it's a vector layer rendered by OpenLayers. And then you can see the rest of this stuff is what's displayed there. So the JSON object or JavaScript object that I've returned, you can see the parcel number here. Corresponds to this number here. You can see that I've got several links in here, and so you can see that I've got the HTML links in there, and then you can see the other attributes that I'm displaying here. And then this stuff down here is based on the point click or the user clicked. Does that answer your question? So in addition to the selection set, when we've got a selection over here, we can copy it to clipboard, which is kind of a nifty feature. Then they can paste it into a spreadsheet. We have a zoom to parcels, and we have different map views, which simply opens it up in other map viewing clients. Come on. And then we got measure tools. So you can see that I'm showing a cumulative distance. You can also see that I'm showing a bearing. You see where it says north 58, east 97 feet
Okay.
in the info tip. That stuff that's so there's our total. And then as I rubber band it around, I show the bearing or azimuth, maybe for you Germans folks. And that segment is 108 feet. The what we call bearing is south 24 degrees east. Total length is 594. So again, it's a vector that's drawn in OpenLayers, and then I can click on it. And you can see I've got vertices now that I can drag around.
Okay.
I can add vertices. I can remove vertices. I can put a label on it. The lines are pretty, the labeling's pretty silly on that. I can adjust the points. I can do fonts. I can make it ugly. I can change the line. So there's, and then the area measuring tool that does the same kind of thing. In other words, I'm trying not to have too many tools up there, so you can measure the area. Once you've measured it, you can select it and start doing stuff with it. And so on.
Nice, huh?
Okay, so that's a quick view. And then so this removes everything. The tools mostly just give you what the button bar does. Zoom to lat long. It's got some pretty cool features in it, if I may say so myself. It's
Oh
got
yeah,
it.
this does a lot more validation than our equivalent does.
It's pretty forgiving with different formats too. It assumes that we're in the north and west hemisphere, which is is an assumption, but it'll take that long that it'll check it again. In other words, it doesn't care too much about the order. You can put a negative in if you want to for longitude, but again, it's going to discard that. You can put it in as degrees, minutes, seconds, or you can put it in as decimal degrees. So that's a tool. Measure distances, measure areas. We saw, I showed you already, write text on map is just the same thing. And again, you can, once you put it there, you can, if you click in exactly the right spot, you can do stuff with it. Clear it. Tools. The only other one that's sort of worthy of So, you guys still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
My internet's been dropping off a little bit lately, and it just wanted to tell me that my internet was shitty. Okay, so I select some stuff, and then the other tool that's worth showing you real quick is buffer. And so you can put in a distance. And so
Oh,
the
it selects
yellow,
everything in that buffer. Okay.
right? So the yellow is what I initially selected. The blue. I should do something that's cooler. Let me see if I can find a
Yeah.
And then this is kind of formatted a little bit differently. It's sort of for a mail merge list. This was a request from one of the counties. So, no magic there. So then the search, I use the Postgres full text search as the basic search. So I put in Bob. And because I'm using full text search, I also get Robert, right?
Well, that's nice. I actually didn't know it had that built in.
I created a abbreviation or
Okay.
a dot sim or whatever. I forget. I did a long time. I can't remember. So
But
anyway,
you did have to configure it. That's what I was wondering.
yes, I imagine your German names might be different than Bob and Bill, but at any rate, this is a pretty standard search results set. So you can select individual ones. You don't have to select them. You can hit map it, and it goes to it. It's not a good example. These ones that are mobile homes are just point objects. Okay, so that's how come when I hit that one, it just zoomed. It didn't appear to highlight anything. Here's one that's a lot, so I can hit map it. And so I've highlighted the parcel, and I've labeled it with the street number, and we can see how good that is. Not too bad. So that's, so you can go select all. Bob is probably a poor choice, but if I went something that's more likely to be well, this probably isn't a good it's not a good example either. That's all
That
it would
label
take.
automatically created just by default. This is the street address 22.
Yeah. And
Okay.
again, that was the same thing I showed you when we hit F12, is that I'm sending up, typically I'm sending up two geometry objects, a polygon that's used to outline the parcel, and a point object that's used for labeling. But if I picked one, like I did before with Bob, and so I can see there's a mobile home, okay, and that's pretty common in Wyoming. So if I hit map it there, whoops, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So it's a little hard to see, but the 26 is all that came up. And it's probably not ideally located. This property, this is probably a mobile home here. That's probably a camper trailer. I don't know where the mobile home is on this one. I don't want to waste time here. There's probably more stuff going on with this. At any rate, if the user has selected something that has
Rich, are you still there? I think now he's frozen.
Maybe the connection dropped. Hey, Rich. Oh, you
There
dropped.
We go. Sorry, as you can see, it says my internet is unstable. Or maybe you can't see that little message from Zoom. Do you hear me?
Yeah, we don't see it, but you did freeze for a minute. Now you're back.
Yeah, it seems like it pisses me off. I've got an expensive cable modem, and they sent me a new one. I mean, the cable modem's probably a cheap piece of crap, but my subscription is expensive. And so I have like a theoretically 2-day-old modem, and it's still the same old problem.
Yeah.
But just be patient. It generally doesn't drop out for even a minute, but it
yeah,
can
that's not a
drop
problem,
out just long enough to break things up. So at any rate, I'll either send a polygon or a point, which is just labeled, or both if it has a polygon and a street address. So then one more thing in the search is that there's these sub tabs, and they have an advanced search, which is kind of a more of an old school thing where you would only put in other words, with the full text search, what I'm doing is I'm aggregating, concatenating, however you want to say it, several columns. There are three kind of redundant parcel ID numbers used by three departments. And so I aggregate those three plus the property owner's name, plus the site address, plus the legal description. So that means that the user can, and then that all goes into a full text search column. So the user can, you know, have a more like Google-esque kind of experience where they can type in whatever they wish. Or for the old school, more traditional users, you can type in the owner name. And then in that case, I'm only searching for that column in the database. And we can spend time later looking at the database, but just so that you see what the functionality is, when we look at the database, it'll help. So anyway, that's the search tab. The print layout is pretty crude. I hate doing paper stuff, but people want it. And so let me see if I can do a layout. So it gives them a thing, and they can put in this. There's some limited ability to, they have the ability to pan or zoom, but they can't change layers or work with the selection. It gives them a legend. It gives them a disclaimer and a north arrow. And The disclaimer is configured in the individual county's config files, which we'll look at later. So that's the main kind of, that's the really fast tour of the buttons. That's a tour of these tabs. The drawing was the deal where something the user had already drawn an object. And so this drawing tab becomes active when I have selected a user drawn feature, not a feature that, in other words, not this gold outline of the parcel, but rather a feature that the user has actually drawn themselves is when this gets activated.
And can those annotations be saved anywhere, or are they just for the session?
Pretty much no. I will show you. If you're, I don't know, if you're referring to that shared Google Doc, we're on bullet or item number one, which is the Greenwood map server.
Yep.
And so on item number two, there's the assessor toolkit. And item 2B is what I call the ag tool, agricultural with editing. And so that is the only one. And so we'll look at that shortly. And that's the only one where they can save to the server. And that's very limited. So the short answer is no. Long answer is I'll show you the exception to that no. And the answer to the user is what I say when a user asks me that question is make a PDF.
Yeah.
It's funky. I mean, I sure would love to just spend way more time adding that kind of cool functionality, but until somebody pays me to do it, it is what it is.
Yep.
The other thing, I don't know if you can see it very well because it's kind of hidden with this toolbar, but if you look at the URL,
yeah,
it's changing all the time. And so we can look at that some other time, but basically it's saving the, do you guys know how to make
it? Yeah, it's saving a lot of state in the URL.
Pretty much. It's not saving any user drawn feature, which is of course what you're asking about.
Yeah.
Is there a way I can hide this toolbar?
I think you can only drag it around, but I do usually find it starts in the most annoying possible place. So dragging it around is usually a good move.
Oh, okay. There we go. I was not. Oh, yeah, it's still pretty annoying.
Yeah, afraid so.
Yeah, I can't drag. Oh, let me stick it. I'm sure I'll never get back to it. So anyway, here's really quick. The URL is ZCR is zoom center rotation. So Z is the zoom, X, Y, zero rotation. Okay.
Yep.
Layers.
That was active.
And then filter is format or syntax that I wish I hadn't adopted, but I did it so many years ago I didn't know any better. But that's it, you can see there the 330904 blah 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 is this parcel number here.
Yeah.
So that's a little funky, but it means that I can copy, paste, bookmark, do whatever with this, and they'll get everything except this white user drawn thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So then info. This is a pretty basic link to an external thing. The clerk's records is item five, which we'll look at later. The property detail is important. The tax information is also item four, which we'll look at later. These This is an easy one. This is in the S3 storage. So I host this for a number of the counties. This map's really old because, whoops, where'd it go? This is an old, Pinedale, Wyoming is probably found in the 1800s or some such thing. But so that's the map. The tax information, like I said, is item four, item five, property detail. So when I click this link here on this selected parcel, or if I click it here on this selected parcel, we get a tab, a new tab comes up. And this is an exempt parcel, which is why it doesn't have so much information in it. This one is a taxable parcel. So there's a bunch of stuff in here. This stuff is pretty much repeated from the info panel. We have valuation, which is pretty important. The assessors, as I've told Karsten, are the folks that I deal with the most, and their statutory responsibility is to set the value of property, and then based on value, it's some percentage of the value is what you pay taxes on. And so what it's showing there is that the actual value, in other words, kind of the appraised or market value, is 144,000, of which 65,000 is land and 79,000 is improvements. This is some weird legislation that's just come into effect, and it's got the asterisk there and the explanation down there. And then what you pay in tax on is like 9% of the total market value. That's probably more than you guys want to know, but
That sounds interesting.
it's this is a big part of the value to the users, is for them to be able to get at this information. And so then if it's land, it'll have different classifications. Let me find an ag parcel maybe. Yeah, so this one's a little bit more interesting. It has 25 acres of agricultural R3. It has 368 acres of agricultural R1. It has 7 acres of residential. I don't know why it's unknown. And then, so that's the land. In other words, where up here it says actual value, the 237,000 is ag land, which is really cheap because it gets a super huge discount. And then they've got 678,000 in improvements on it. So they've got a one-story ranch building, a two-story, a farm implement equipment shed, a farm utility building, a farm implement equipment shop, a farm utility loafing shed. I don't know what that is, a farm utility building, and a storage grain thing. And so obviously these are one-to-many relationships. You have one parcel. It can have multiple classes of land. It can have multiple dwellings, or what they call improvements on it. And an improvement can have multiple what they call characteristics. So one-to-many, one-to-many. And so this is just kind of a grid layout. And so these are pulling in from multiple tables. And then the other thing we've got, again, we host this on S3, and some of them have photos, which remind me, I'll show you that in a minute.
So that drawing, what was that last drawing? Is that a building drawing or?
Yeah, it's an exterior footprint. It shows how they derived the square footage. In other words, they're saying that this one-story ranch building is 1,240 square feet. And it's weird stuff. I mean, I don't get how they come up with some of this stuff, but at any rate, so they're saying it's 1,240 square feet. And so this sketch, if you multiply those dimensions out, hopefully comes out to be 1,200 feet.
So
Or
this one, you said this is on S3. Is that an image or a scanned image or something?
yeah, it's a JPEG.
And did you create these relations or did they all give that to you?
They give it to me. This is part of their work. They have to value real property like, parcels, on a 6-year cycle. And they go out and measure it, and they input those into a third-party program, and it dumps out what we call sketches, and they're dumped out as JPEGs. And I don't want to get too far off track, but so this
But
looks
basically,
like,
they have to show they're working because they could be challenged if someone doesn't like the valuation they got.
exactly, yes. And so this is a tool, this map server thing is a tool that they use so that if somebody, well, particularly if somebody calls them on the phone, they can say, hey, go to the map server, look up your parcel, super easy, like, put in your name or put in your address. They find their parcel, and then they can go to that property detail, and they can, they can dispute it and say, hey, you've got a 1200 square foot house, and my house is, 800 square feet or whatever. And so this, I did this kind of quick there, but I changed the mode.
So assessor.
Yeah. So previously it was map. Okay. So that's the default thing.
And it has only some of the information. Assessor has extended information.
Yes, this has a bunch more stuff, and that's sort of like the item two that we're going to look at in a second. But just the one thing I wanted to show you is that now we have photos also. So we stick these on S3, and again, they're on a server at the county. And so each night, part of the script that syncs data up. What I'm doing on all the counties is, and this may change. We'll talk about this later, but in fact, I'm going to talk about it next week with all the IT people. Right now, for 16 of the 18 counties, I have a VM that I remote into at the county, and they're mostly Windows VMs. And I have a scheduled task, and it does more or less like three things. It pulls the CAMA data. CAMA is an acronym for Computer Aided Mass Appraisal. And that's the generic term for the software that the assessors use. And so in Wyoming, it's in an Oracle database, but that's soon to change. At any rate, so I pull data out of a database is just CSV files. I push that into our AWS bucket. I pull the GIS data from the county, assuming that that county maintains their own GIS data. We maintain it for about six counties. But regardless, we put the GIS data into the S3 bucket. Unfortunately, they use some different formats. So we have personal geodatabases. We have one personal geodatabase that's still the MDB format, and we have a couple that are file geodatabases, and some of them are shape files. But whatever, thanks to Frank Warmerdam and GDAL, we have no problems with any of that. And then the third thing that gets synced is these what we call photos and sketches. So this is just photos of this account. And so again, they're in the S3 bucket. But this portion of the S3 bucket has public read access, whereas the data that we're dumping and then ingesting in the EC2 instance obviously has restricted permissions on it.
So was it true that the accessor tab only appears if you go to the accessor directory there?
Yep.
And that's when you're logged in, kind of?
Yeah. So I had to authenticate. Let me just, I'll go back.
I have one question from something before. So when you show the print layout and you were showing you could zoom in and out, is that, so you print that just from the browser print tools? There's no other create pretty F or something?
Yeah, it's pretty, it's pretty basic. All I'm doing with it is it's pretty ugly. But I've got to, oh, that was something I wanted to show you too. I'll try to stay on track here. So I've got a bunch of divs that
So is
so
that just
here's
a HTML file that you use, kind of a template for each county, or so they
I
might?
have a single template that's used for all of them. And
Okay.
then I have some Apache magic that, in other words, you see map here, but it's actually an HTML file that's shared across all the map servers that has that we're looking at right here. Okay. And I was trying to show you so I'm doing some ugly stuff here. I've got an absolute position div, and then I've got I kind of blew it by resizing, but within that I've got some additional absolutely positioned elements. Sorry, I kind of lost them because I resized. So that's all they get. In other words, it doesn't make a PDF for them. It puts the various elements. Let me just switch back and forth and then we'll see it again. So they pick paper size and orientation. And so then based on that, I create a fixed div for the map, a fixed div for the heading, a div for the text box, a div for the legend, a div for the north arrow, and a div for the disclaimer. And so those will be sized and located differently depending on
the selection I did.
Which it's crude. I just, you know, printing out of a map, out of a web browser sucks no matter how you do it. And so it's not, you know, whatever, it does the job, but it's not, I mean, if you wanted to do a better job, you get like a third party PDF generator thing, and then you're going to re-render every single element here. So there's pros and cons to both ways of going.
No, I just wanted to find out what it's doing. And in general, the tools you showed is for the most part are same for most counties, for all of them.
Yeah, everything that we've looked at so far is going to be common. You know, it's all common code. Each county has a config file, but Yeah, we're looking at the probably the most complex county, just so that nobody's gonna have more features. Some counties may have somewhat fewer features. Obviously, they're gonna have different layers, like radically different layers.
And for how many counties are there, is the assessor tool in addition there, or in the other words, how many counties don't have that?
I think in that shared doc, under item two, I say 13 counties have the assessor toolkit extension.
Okay.
And within that, let me just blow through the layer control and then we can switch to the assessor toolkit.
Okay.
Within the assessor toolkit, there's a couple features that are fairly sophisticated that I charge them extra for. There's some that are pretty basic that are common for all of the counties. So this is the deLegend thing, and I shared some documentation on it. I don't know. I guess I don't really need to say anything about this. It's the same stupid legend that their layer control that every GIS desktop program has. Oh, I know what I want to show you. If I resize or better yet, if I go to, so if you open this on a cell phone, the app hasn't, the code behind it hasn't changed. The HTML behind it hasn't changed. Nothing has changed, right? So I'm in the what do they call it? The mobile
Yeah.
emulator, right? So I'm on an iPhone SE here. And so what I'm doing is that I'm looking at the width of the window, and if it falls below like 900 pixels or 940 or something, I found some magic number, then you haven't reloaded any new HTML, you haven't really changed anything, but you have what I call the mobile view. And that's sort of what I had there in toward the bottom of that Google Doc under session one. I had mobile and desktop modes. So this is what I call the desktop mode, which looks more like a regular,
Yeah.
desktop GIS. This is the mobile mode. So you got the
Yeah.
same
So
deal here.
it basically shows fewer things at a time.
Yeah. It
Yeah.
switches dynamically.
Pretty nice. So that's a question. Do you have any feedback from them? How many people are using it mobily?
No, I don't. I don't know. I
Okay.
had, obviously this predates mobile phones, because I put it online in about 2000, 2001 maybe. And then when mobile phones started coming around, I had two versions of the app, and that proved to be a pain in the ass. And to maintain two versions. And so I landed on this, and so it, to answer your question, would take a little bit more logging. In other words, when I had two separate apps, I could look at my server logs and I
Yeah.
could, count up how many times somebody opened one app versus the other. But now I have no way of logging which mode they're in, and to do so would require, I mean, it wouldn't be hard if you really wanted to know. You just send something back to the server when they switch between the desktop and mobile modes. But okay, so let me go. I'm trying not to bore you guys to death, but
No, it's all good.
so whoops, I'm already authenticated. It would have presented me with the user and password box there. So same map. It looks a little different because for one thing, we have different default layers turned on and off over here. And that's all configured in the map server map file in the metadata section. And then the dlegend generator. In other words, you can set which layers are on and off. You can set which groups are expanded or collapsed. And obviously, you set a whole boatload of other stuff in here too. But that's all set in the metadata section of the map server file, map file, and then parsed, and it generates this legend. And so, a couple things then that have been added. In other words, you took away some layers that are clutter for the assessors. And we added the assessor tab and we added the assessor layer group here. So these are all layers that are, private to county staff and that, that the assessor uses. I don't want to drill down too much on all of them, but so the quality label simply tells the quality of the improvement on that. The account type tells what sort of account it is. The change finder is halfway cool. So you can see what it's showing there is these buildings.
Oh,
So
nice. Yeah.
this one here where it says new. So this is 2013. Okay, so this is 2020. So you can see there's no building here in 2020. In 2023, we do have a building.
So they built it new in between.
Value measure is another just something that helps them, figure out what they did to set the value, so to speak. So all this stuff just comes straight out of this database, out of the Oracle database. So again, it's just a simple thematic map for the quality. Okay, so those are the easy ones. Actually, I guess, well, yeah.
For these,
Yeah,
so you
one
said the
quick.
map server stuff is mostly the same. Is that true for the assessor stuff as well?
Yes and no. I mean, every county has its own set of map files. So in that sense, no. It's going to be different for each county. There's a good bit of copy and paste between the different counties. And again, this the whole thing that you see is the same HTML container. In other words, it has the same divs and stuff like that. We've just added, another layer group and stuff like that. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I think so. And then I assume that if you changed from map to assessor, it seems that everything is generated dynamically, what we see here from database and so on.
Yeah, pretty much. This will answer Eldon's question from earlier about saving to the server. So there's a really wide spectrum of stuff in here. So those, I just clicked on the ones that are, you know, like self-explanatory. So then the other thing that we add in here is a tab called Assessor Tools, and that gives you kind of a funky menu. And I'm going to try to go through these without belaboring them too much, but LEAs is the first one. It's super easy. And they are, LEA is a land economic area. You don't have to understand it. I'm going to make one change here, okay? I'm going to switch servers. The server that Greenwood Map, okay, so a bare Greenwood Map, a www.greenwood map, and a maps.greenwood map all go to the same place. I didn't know any better. That's my dev server, and I'm going to go there real quick because I don't want to change. We're not going to make major changes, but I don't want to disrupt anything that they've got going. So this is a homegrown authentication system. So we're back where we were, and I hit land economic areas. And these are, I don't know, they're just sort of similarly classified parcels by some criteria that they know about. And so this comes out of the database. And so this is land economic area 10,102. And that code means something to them. I forget exactly, but there's some logic to it. And so the reason I want to switch here is this is shared by everybody. So I'm going to uncheck all the land economic areas in this list. And so the, you know, this is LEA 10,000 and there's 20 parcels in it. This is 10,101. There's 36 parcels in it and so on. So you can pick the different ones. You can check them all and uncheck them. You can also generate random colors for them. This is a little chunk of Postgres code that I had fun writing. It just, you know, it just goes to the database and generates random colors. And so then if I pick just one, then I can go show on map and it then zooms it to that LEA. Like I said, you don't really have to understand what LEAs are, but you can see the principle there is that we've taken a classification from the Oracle database. And in other words, we've done essentially a group by query, and this does get saved. So in other words, the colors get saved and which ones are turned on and off get saved. And this one's sort of a good example. You couldn't see that it changed much, but it also helps them find outliers because you can see that, I don't know, that's not that much of an outlier, but they might look at it and go, whoa, that one's not supposed to be in LA, that, whatever. And so then neighborhoods work pretty much the same way. The main difference between a neighborhood and an LEA is that the LEA is land and the neighborhood is improvements. So like we got duplexes here and we can zoom to these duplexes and looks like I still have my neighborhoods on. LEA's neighborhoods. Anyway, wellhead exemptions. I guess we can look at that real quick. It's sort of a report. It's in actually the Wyoming Constitution. It's not even in state statute that if you have a producing wellhead on your property, you get 40 acres of your property exempt from taxes. The idea that being it would be double taxation because you're already paying on the mineral extraction. And it's sort of weird, but if you have five producing wellheads in one, what we call a nominal 40 acres, you only get one 40-acre exemption. Whereas if you have five producing wellheads are oil and gas. I mean, Wyoming's driven by mineral extraction. And if you have five producing wellheads in five different nominal 40s, you would get 200 acres of exemption. So it's a classic point and polygon GIS problem. And so I'll show you what a nominal 40 looks like in one second here. And
It's
so,
just one question. Is the oil in all parts of the state, or is there specific areas that it's mostly concentrated?
very much in specific areas, which has a really huge impact on how wealthy or poor a county is. I mean, generally, Wyoming's a pretty wealthy state. It runs in the black, which is pretty unique, thanks to mineral extraction. There's a lot of coal production, but we don't really work in the coal counties. They're in the Northeast, but we do work with some counties that have significant oil and gas production. And most of it goes to the state. But then the state doles it back out to the counties. And it's worth kind of getting your head around that, because it really affects, how much they can pay for, what do we want to call this, an optional service, or no, you don't have to have a map server, right? And if you want a map server and you don't have much money in your county, because some of these counties are really tiny, the populations are very small. If you don't have money and you don't have population, a map server can be expensive. And I've been lucky because I was in the right place at the right time and established a relationship with these counties when, before Esri got to them and stuff like that. And some of them I could, if they've got a big population, they have a bigger tax base regardless. But if they have a small population and a lot of mineral extraction, they have a really big tax base. They get far more, they can assess at a much higher rate for mineral extraction than for residential property. And so consequently, some of this stuff is important in terms of the map server and our ability to show it. So this is a report. And so this is an account, a single parcel owned by this Blue Spruce Operating LLC. And so what I'm saying here, just on this one that here, is that we've got five, we're given it five 40-acre exemptions for a total of 200 acres. And RealWear is the name of the software that the CAMA software. So CAMA, computer-aided mass appraisal, is the generic term for it, just like CAD is the generic term for computer-aided drafting. AutoCAD is the name of a CAD program. RealWear, it's a term you're going to hear a lot when you're working with these folks, because that's the primary database that we're getting so much of this information out of. So RealWear is to AutoCAD. RealWear is to CAMA as AutoCAD is to CAD. And so where we say RealWear acreage, that means that the total acres for this account is 471 acres, of which we're going to give them 200 acres exemption by virtue of there being at least one producing oil or gas well in these five different nominal border quarters. So again, it's a classic point and polygon GIS problem that Post just does a really nice job with. But you can see it's like, okay, that's halfway complex. So that's where we got this map at length. And so that shoots us over to this parcel. And then we can start looking at some stuff on it. And we can turn on wellheads. And we can turn on, so a nominal, have you guys dealt at all with the U.S. Public Land Survey System?
For myself, not too much. Just...
No, I haven't.
All of the Western United, well, all of the United States, except for the original 13 colonies, Louisiana and Texas, have what's called the Public Land Survey System that was developed shortly after independence. And without getting into the politics of it, the United States had a shitload of land that they stole from the Indians, and they didn't have any revenue. And so they wanted to get it homesteaded. Like after the Civil War, they gave out a lot of, you maybe, I don't know if you've heard the expression 40 acres and a mule.
Yep.
But it was because the United States, the federal government, didn't have any money to pay the soldiers, but they had a ton of land, and apparently they had some mules. And so in order to do it equitably, and equitably ignoring the Native Americans, and to avoid a lot of the European, I mean, the guys that came up with this system were really smart, regardless of the politics or of the land grab or whatever. They developed this really amazing system called the Public Land Survey System. And 250 years later, it still serves us pretty well. And it kind of grids out most of the United States and, you know, gives it unique identifiers and gives instructions for how that land is surveyed and divided. And then subsequently, you know, like like the city of Seattle would have started. The city of Seattle would have started as Native American land, and then, you
Yep.
know, white dudes grabbed title to it, and they would have chunked it out into this sort of rectangular grid that you see here. And then as town sites were created, then those would be subdivisions that were, you know, kind of like child divisions within the public land survey system. But the public land survey system is the backbone of land ownership in the United States in terms of the federal government owns all that. Well, one of the principles of the public land survey system was called survey before settlement. So the United States federal government has all this land. They're going to give it out to private citizens to pay off debts. And once the private citizens own it, then they can tax those citizens on that land, and they can tax them on what they do with it, which is exactly what we're looking at here, extracting minerals. And so it's a source of revenue, but they had the foresight to go like, hey, we got to like not screw up like some of the things we've experienced in Europe. And so we're going to come up with a system of doing it, and it actually works. So there's your 2-minute history of the settlement in the United States of America.
Okay. So basically that stands for PLSS, right?
Public Land Survey System. Yeah.
And then how is that related to the township and range?
That's exactly it. Yep.
That's the same thing?
Yeah. I'm sure if you go on Wikipedia, you can find better and less biased explanations of it. But yeah.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with your biases, but yeah, I've done a bunch of work with Western Washington property parcels, and I think basically I'm dealing with downstream outputs of this rather than PLSS directly.
There's a guy who's related to another colleague of ours, Matt Stevenson, is another GIS guy here in Seattle, and friends with me in Eldon, and there was one with Forterra, like you know, the land trust, and he was working. Charlie Rains was working with the problem of this checkerboard saying, and in Washington, where they had like these checkerboard ownership of protected, and other lands.
Yeah, so again, so many of these things go back to that, this public land survey system, the checkerboard, again, is tied to. So you mentioned township and range. So as long as we're on the topic, let me just blast out to
Oh, there it is, attention and read.
so basically, there is, I forget, like say on the order of about a dozen principal meridians or origins, but you'll see them listed as principal. Are you on the Willamette principal meridian in Seattle, or are you on a different one?
Oh, how was that? You mean in which meridian?
I actually don't know what a reference point is. I know that parcels in King County do have township and range reference numbers, but I don't know what the meridian
I
behind it
don't
is.
know exactly.
Well, the township and range goes back to the origin, the 00. I know Oregon is on the Willamette principal meridian. This is called the sixth. What we're looking at here in Wyoming, in Wyoming is on the sixth principal meridian, which I think is off in Kansas. And so where you see, like right here is 33 North, Township 33 North, Range 108 West. So that means it's 33 times six. A township is 6 by 6, 36 square miles. So that means that it's 33 times 6 miles north and 108 times 6 miles west of some place in Kansas or Nebraska or wherever the sixth principal meridian is. The Idaho ones are on the Boise meridian. And so then
Yeah, I just
within.
looked it up. All of Washington's on the same one as Oregon, with its origin being roughly important.
Yeah, so Willamette, like the Willamette River. So the township and range are relative to that principal meridian. So you guys are on Willamette. Wyoming is on the sixth. And actually, it's kind of interesting. The Wind River Indian Reservation, which is Fremont County, Idaho, has its own principal meridian. Doesn't show up real well, but this is the Wind River. Still doesn't show up too well, but you can kind of see here that they have their own principal meridian, and so the origin is right here. So this is the Wind River meridian. So Township 1 North, Range East, 1 Northwest, 1 Southwest, 1 Southeast, and so on. So this is one of the other counties that we do. At any rate, within the township, let me jump back to where we were. Within the township, it's split into sections that are 1 mile by 1 mile, starting in the northeast, 1 through 6, and then zigzagging back. And this numbering sequence is called boostahedron, based on the way an oxen would plow a field. So coming back to what we're looking at, so a section is 1 mile by 1 mile, and it has 640 acres in it. And so then this public land survey system, so this is a little hard to see, but this is section six here, okay? And so then the public land survey system says you divide it into like a pie. You intersect and intersect to your heart's content. And the nominal 40 acres, there's 16 nominal theoretical 40 acre divisions in a section. And so that's what this whole wellhead exemption thing is based on, is the gold outline is that whatever I said, 240 acre parcel. In other words, it's this blue spruce parcel of 470 acres. The acres never come out to be exactly 40 for various reasons that are, actually totally legit. The public land survey system has a bunch of cool mechanisms to account for that. But this is the parcel that's, in other words, it'd probably be nominally 480. And then you can see these purple dots are the wellheads. They're classified by the producer. So I'm not sure who the producer is here since it's purple. But so on this 280 or whatever it was parcel, we've got one wellhead here. So we got 40, another 40, another 40, another 40, another 40. So we got five producing wellheads that happen to be in five different nominal 40s. In other words, when I say nominal 40 based on a public land survey system, then we come up with this little report. And so the map, it lets the user go back and forth, kind of check it on the map, like, does that look right? And if it looks right, then they enter. We give them the 40, even if it's not exactly 40. But anyway, that's the way the rule works. So they'll put this into their system and they'll move on to the next one. And so this one, oh, there's one more layer here that can help. I'm sorry, I should have turned this on. Well, okay, this makes it even easier for them to read.
So see where those are.
So in other words, this green hatched one, we're saying it's exempt. In other words, it only gets one 40-acre exemption, even though it has two producing wellheads in it. Don't sweat, the legality or whatever you want to call it. Like I said, this is part of the Constitution. A lot of this stuff, the Constitution is pretty weird. I mean, this is the only one where I've really had to deal with that.
Yeah.
We definitely deal with stuff that's state statute.
So it's good to have a little background because I didn't, but now I understand some. But basically, does that mean if there was like five wellheads in the same quadrant, they get only one exemption?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And what also, just one for practical understanding, if you have these wellheads, they're pretty far apart. Does it mean in between there can be agriculture, or is that usually not the case that there's agriculture around those?
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, yes, sort of. You can kind of tell this is like sagebrush. So yeah, there's not much on this parcel we're looking at. There's probably not much agricultural production going on.
So the maximum would be some grazing ground, but nothing else.
Yeah, no, this is probably pretty high elevation stuff. It's 7,000 feet at least. So it has very little agricultural value. But yeah, for sure, if it's in private ownership, they will, they'll produce, for whatever reason, I guess it's geology, the areas in the county that produce. So this is the county, and you can see this is the dots are the wellheads, and they're classified by the what they call the producer. So Exxon, Jonah, Altra, Hillcorp. And so you can see that only in some parts of the county do they have oil and gas production, and for whatever reason, those don't tend to be particularly high value ag parts of the county, but
Okay, well, it's just some background. Thanks for that.
So I guess what I was starting to say is, like, you don't have to understand all the details of the rules, statutes, or constitution. When something comes up, you go to somebody that has knowledge of it and tell them to explain it to you like you're a 5-year-old or something like that. And so all you have to do, and I shouldn't say all because sometimes it's hard, is you have to convert. In other words, they're subject matter experts. The assessors are. Some of them are way more expert than others, but because you find the one that really knows the subject matter well, they explain it to you. You convert it into a GIS problem. You code it out in PostGIS, and you don't really have to understand the legislation that it's based on or anything like that.
Okay.
And when you start looking at, like, maybe some of the map files and stuff like that, I'll have notes in there or comments that'll say, like, so and so, said to do it this way on such and such a date. It's interesting to know stuff about it, but it's not like you have to take a piece of legislation and turn it into a PostGIS query. You just need to find somebody that can explain the legislation well enough to you that you can put it into spatial context. And if it's a complex problem, they'll come to you and they'll say, hey, we have this new regulation that we have to meet. They explain it to you, and then you go, yeah, that's a classic GIS problem. In other words, that's what I see here. I see point and polygon with a few additional criteria applied to it. In other words, one polygon only gets counted once, even if it has 5 points in it. And so then you go, yeah, I can, we have the data for it. Sometimes we get asked to do things that we don't have the data for. And of course, then you just have to say tough shit, can't do that. But then you say to them, I can do that, but it's going to cost you, $1,500 or $3,000 or whatever. And then they say, yeah, we can do it because we're a wealthy oil and gas county. Or they say, we can't afford to do that because we don't have the revenue base to do it.
So, in terms of these legislations, were there many changes due to legislation changes, or is that rather rare that they have to change in a big way, or?
There's probably a couple a year. So it's not like it's coming down the pike real fast. And you can say no, we can't do it, we can't help you with that right now. You can you can I mean, one of the problems we get sometimes is that one county wants something and the other counties don't see the value in it. So that's not so good. But if you've got a county that asks you for something, and then you check with a few of the other counties, and they'll say, oh, yeah, that would be great. Then it makes it easier to code it. And then the other option is, if they ask you for something that you can identify as clearly a GIS problem, but that would be a total pain in the butt to, present. It's not just, I'm saying, like, you got to turn it into a PostGIS query, which is actually the easy part. You also then have to present it in a nice user interface in the map server. And sometimes that can take a lot more work than.
Yeah, I tend to think that is the harder part.
Yeah. Exactly. So you might say, yeah, we can help you with this, but you can't afford to pay me what's going to be required to code it. And especially early on, where you've got where you're, inheriting or adopting my whole code base, you're not going to be able to cut through it as quickly as I can because you're not going to be that up to speed for the first year or whatever. So the way that you could approach a problem like that is to work with Stephen Cowley, and he can do it in a desktop GIS. And so yeah, it's not a nice interactive tool that you've added to, maybe all the counties, but you can still. Steven's very enthusiastic. I've talked to him a fair bit lately, and I have the feeling his skills are pretty good. I haven't tested that, but that's like in my shop. Okay, so where I'm doing both GIS production and web stuff, it's really easy for me to say, man, that would be like, $10,000 for me to do this, and I couldn't get to it for 6 months. It's easy for me to say, but by the way, I can do it in QGIS in a couple days and, charge you a few $100. You don't have quite that flexibility, but I would encourage you to work with Stephen, because he might be all over it. And some of this oil and gas stuff, he's in more of an oil and gas area than I am. I've actually lived in a resort community and have learned the oil and gas stuff later in my career.
Okay. Yeah, I will definitely talk to him, and we need also, this other thing about the data editing where you were planning to program something. That's another topic. We'll need to connect with him and so on.
For sure.
Like
I'll
last
be.
question I have is there any specific or more striking differences between the Idaho counties and the one in Wyoming in terms of legislation or anything?
The Idaho counties is sort of easier in that regard. We don't do an assessor toolkit for any of them.
Oh,
You know,
okay.
it's just so different that the good and bad is that all of the Wyoming counties use the same RealWear software. The bad is that I don't really like RealWear very well, but at least they're all on the same database. The
So is it
Idaho.
RealWear? Is that a kind of desktop application, or it's a web application, or a fee for service, or?
It's owned by Harris Corporation, which is huge. I mean, they are like, they're probably a Fortune 500 company. It was created by a smaller company called Colorado Customware. And so it was kind of Rocky Mountain based. And it pretty much started as desktop, okay? And then there's a long history, and I don't want to waste too much of our time on all the gory details of the history, but it still primarily is a desktop as of today, September, whatever it is, a desktop app. And each county has an Oracle instance running in that county. And they're in the process of switching it to a web cloud-hosted thing. So it'll still be Harris Corporation owning it and programming it and so on. But it'll move, and this affects us quite a bit. It'll move to the cloud. And at this point, I don't know too many details about it, but I have warned every county when I've spoken with them about, selling the business to you. I've framed it as like you guys are keeping the same software and the servers, but the change in the RealWear to the cloud is going to be challenging, and the subtext there being that that might cost you money.
Okay, so will at the county IT conference, will there likely be any representative of the RealWear company using?
No,
Okay.
there will be And that it's pretty weird because I got invited to talk and I'm talking on Tuesday. And one of the topics is this RealWear conversion. And, you know, that's what they asked me to talk about. And which I don't at this, I mean, when they asked me in June, it was pretty reasonable to think that I might know something. But then the next day, there's two guys from the Department of Revenue, who will be talking about it, but I won't be there for that. And that's just as well because I don't really like them. But the way it works is the Wyoming Department of Revenue actually is the one that pays for the software, and they mandate that every county uses it. The Department of Revenue in both Idaho and Wyoming, and I'm sure in Washington, is a state agency that handles property tax and sales tax and mineral tax and, you know, pretty much any kind of, well, they would, Wyoming doesn't have personal property tax or personal income tax, which is, you know, kind of weird, but I'm
Like
sure in
Washington
Washington.
State also doesn't have it.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say in Washington that it would be, that they would handle personal income tax, but obviously not. They would, you know, they do sales tax on like motor vehicle stuff and stuff like that. And so then they have what's called rulemaking authority. And so then they can tell the counties, you know, by statute, every county has an assessor, a treasurer, a clerk, a sheriff. Those people are elected every 4 years. And the statutes say, you know, generally what their responsibilities are, but the Department of Revenue then has rulemaking authority that further refines that. In other words, it gets into the weeds with exactly how you set values on a house and, you know, what limits you have and in this case, which software you use. And so the Department of Revenue is the one that actually pays Harris several million a year for the RealWear software. And so it's kind of a weird deal because the counties are the actual end users, you know, but they haven't paid for it. So it's like having a company car, right? The company's paying for your car, but you're the one that has to drive it when the clutch goes out. You know, then you have to go to the company, and the company, you know, you're assuming you work for a company like I worked for surveyors, right? And so I had a company truck, but if they lease it, then I can't go to the lease, you know, leasing agency and say, hey, the clutch blew out. So it's kind of a weird deal, but it's something we're going to have to deal with. And I'm here to, you know, it's the database is going to be the same. The things we're going to be looking for to get out of it are going to be the same, but the mechanism that we have to get the data out is going to change.
You were
And
saying it might be an API instead of directly connecting to the database.
yeah, the rumor I hear right now is it's for sure going to be an API, which, you know, that doesn't tell you shit. I mean, if you're connecting to a database that, you know, you can query with SQL, then it's like, great, I know how to do that. Whereas if you have an API and they say, oh, it's a .NET API and it only works with Windows, I just say, fuck you. You know, I mean, I don't do Windows. So, that's some of my reservations, but we will, you know, we'll get through it. What I envision is that you guys would do the programming and that I would help you know, more with the translation, kind of like this column is what is used to sum up these values that we then present as the total assessed value. And these columns are what you sum up to get the value that's the land value and stuff like that. I'm confident that we can figure it out. And I have planted the seed that it is going to be a pain, which equates to potentially costing money. We might be lucky, and the API might be great, and bug free. And because they're switching versions. And so that's my other concern is that we haven't seen the API. Has anybody seen the API? Does the API actually work? And how many bugs are in it? And that's where I go, like, it's particularly difficult because as a contractor to the county, I'm like two steps removed from RealWear, you know, because the Department of Revenue is the one that's paying the bill. So they have the contract with Harris. And so it's, I'm just bitching. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to say like this is some thing that you need to be alarmed about or concerned about. I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm just grumpy about it because you know, I feel like the decision's made by non-users, but I suppose if you're the check writer, you get to make the decision and the users can take what they get.
Oh, last question is, so, but will that mean that in the future we will not need to kind of, go into these county machines because it will all be done via this API? I mean, a data pool kind of.
And that's something I mean talk a fair amount about with the IT people next week. Because when I started doing this stuff, Amazon Web Services didn't exist. And I started doing the first few map servers were hosted on county hardware. And so it set kind of a precedent that I had a pretty big footprint. Well, when I started doing this stuff, most of these counties didn't even have IT departments. And so I was really relying on county hardware, and I had, you know, full admin access and stuff like that. And as time has gone by, you know, that's changed. I don't do as much. But what would really be nice would be if we could get away from having to remote into, if we could get away from having to administer anything on county hardware. And I think that'll fly well with the IT folks because they don't like, they're all concerned about security, justifiably so. And any outsider like me or you is, you know, a security risk in their eyes. And so we won't like the problem with the IT folks is that they pretty much don't know how to, you know, do SQL queries or manage Oracle or whatever. And so I've had to set that stuff up. And then if it changes, I still have to be able to access it. But if the Oracle part of it goes away, we can really simplify it. And so what I'm going to pitch to them next week is that we pretty much get out of the business of having to administer or manage any scripts on their servers. That won't help happen immediately, but hopefully, as I think they're rolling the RealWear version update out over a period of a year. And so I think that they will be receptive to it. And I think that it'll make our lives, it'll take a load off our shoulders.
Yeah, it sounds that this could be the good part once this API stuff is figured out and stabilized, and that not having to remote on these servers would be good.
Yes, for sure.
So I think we should probably wrap up this session and then make a break, have a break because it's almost 2 hours now.
Sure.
Yeah.
We could leave any other odd applications for some other time. Maybe just if you have anything else what is relying on the more mainstream, map server assessors or any other things related to that.
No, let's do that. I mean, I've got this agenda that in the shared Google Doc, and we know where we're at on it right now. And I here's my proposal. You guys are in charge, but if we take a break and then pick up with session two and really try to focus on getting you as much as possible that you could then set up your own dev server. Does that sound? Because then you could work on that like tomorrow or whatever, and then when we reconvene on Friday, we can. It's just there's so many little parts to it that you're going to have questions. I mean, stuff's not going to work. I don't know what, but is that a reasonable proposal?
Yeah, I think so. Well then.
Yeah, I agree. One other quick request. Can you send us a username and password for at least one county's assessor section just so that we can look at stuff in there?
Sure.
Thanks. Awesome.
So this is just a utility thing we use in-house, but it's worth showing you because our authentication mechanism is homegrown. So you would like ELDANG, right?
Yeah.
And you can type your password, except of course we're on Zoom, so you can't. So why don't you tell me how, why don't we just use GW Map, okay? Or if you have another throwaway one you prefer, I don't care.
That one's fine.
And what's your email? Let me see, I've got it somewhere here.
Thank you.
I
I
suppose
just
you
put it in
can.
the chat.
Oh, shoot. Hang on. I cannot move this stupid toolbar.
Doesn't work.
Oh, those get, yeah, those are special.
It won't let me grab it.
Right, so it's EG at eldeng.com.
The type is a class, and we don't use that too often, but
Yeah.
occasionally we do. So, like I said, this is just an internal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice tool for generating the salt and all that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just something we threw together for internal use, but
I didn't work with anyone here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that.
Actually, Eldon, you know what I'm going to
A
do?
lot of work on top of like creating,
Yeah.
but then like relate to it. We're neither like it's like we're trying to create programs and we can support, so
You have a lot of background noise.
we're also.
Yeah, so I had to move into the open space because my meeting room ran out.
Oh, okay, no worries. I just
Okay.
wasn't sure if it was me.
Yeah.
So, Alvin, what I'm doing is I'm putting you on www2, my dev server, and I'm putting you, in other words, in my universe, I have localhost on my laptop, I have maps, which is the name of the EC2 instance, and I have W2, which is
I'm allowed to. I'm
my
not sure
dev
allowed
server.
to. So just bring the concert.
And then Subnet is the county that I'm going to add you to.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And so now you should be able to go to so www.greenwoodmap.com sublet map server assessor.
Yep, I'm in. Thank
cool.
you.
And obviously we can just paste that in as necessary in any of the others. Okay, so you want to take a break?
Yeah. What do you think, a half hour break or something?
Yeah, should we reconvene at 3?
Yeah, from my side, that sounds good.
Do you want to send me another invite or do you want to leave this open?
I can just, you know, we can connect to the same thing, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I think it should work. It is always the same link, so I just reuse it.
All right, well, I'm just going to leave it open then.
Yep.
And you've got my phone number, my cell phone, if...
Yeah, I have it, if
okay,
anything
fine.
Was there, so...
All right, see you in half hour.
See you then.
Cool. Sounds good. Thank you.